Standing at the starting line of the California State Championships, Lauren Fleshman felt invincible. At just 14, she'd become part of the top high school cross-country team in California history. Newspapers featured her photo mid-race, wild eyes, bared teeth, raised fist, a portrait of pure athletic ferocity. Her father's response? Pride mixed with warning. If it weren't for your long blonde ponytail, you'd look like a dyke. The contradiction was jarring but revealing. Female athletes exist in a strange duality, celebrated for strength yet expected to maintain acceptable femininity. This tension would define not just Lauren's career, but the experience of countless women in sports. 50 years after Title IX promised equality, girls still drop out of sports at twice the rate of boys by age 14. Why? Because the entire system was built by men, for men, with women expected to simply fit in. Before puberty, girls compete evenly with boys, holding age group records in swimming, track, and endurance. Then, around 12 and a half, everything changes. Male puberty brings increased bone density, larger muscle mass, 10-12% more hemoglobin, and lower body fat, creating performance gaps of 10 to 50% depending on the sport. Yet nobody explained this to Lauren. She watched her girlfriends develop breasts and hips and lose enthusiasm for activities they once loved. In PE class, girls checked for period leaks during sit-ups and struggled with ill-fitting uniforms. Research confirms 73% of girls report breast-related concerns affecting sports participation, yet over half don't wear proper sports bras because discussing these issues feels taboo. For Lauren, puberty arrived during her sophomore year at Stanford. Her weight climbed from 122 to 135 pounds. Her breasts grew. Her thighs touched. Running became harder. After finishing in the 70s instead of her usual top placement, her coach asked about her weight and suggested she eat healthier. Vague advice, followed by the clearest message, just don't do anything stupid. Code for don't get an eating disorder. What Lauren experienced has a name, the female performance wave. Male athletes aged 18 to 22 hit peak testosterone and maximum training capacity, perfect timing for collegiate athletics. Meanwhile, women's bodies are investing in fertility. Higher estrogen promotes softer bodies, more fat, and monthly fluctuations incompatible with steady improvement. This plateau isn't failure. It's biology preparing for future peak performance, which typically begins in women's mid-20s. But collegiate sports weren't designed with this timeline in mind. They were built in the early 1900s to promote traditional masculinity. And even today, the NCAA has no female-specific policies. Lauren's teammate Julia embodied this tragedy. Admired for her discipline and ideal runner's physique, she suffered catastrophic leg fractures, revealing osteoporosis from never menstruating. Her bones were literally full of holes, not from lack of effort, but from a system that rewarded her body's destruction. Another teammate, Jean, confessed while purging, "You shine such a bright light, it's blinding. I'd rather be skinny and injured than healthy and running fast." At Stanford's annual team meeting, head coach Vin delivered his integrity speech, defining it as doing what you say you'll do. He blamed the women's team struggles on their lack of integrity. Women who promised top 20 finishes but placed 135th, who ran extra miles secretly, who didn't eat properly and got injured. He insisted both teams were treated identically, attributing male success to superior integrity. This analysis ignored glaring realities. Vin coached both teams, but focused on men while women felt invisible, especially when injured. The behaviors he criticized, eating disorders, self-harm, self-sabotage, predictably appear on women's teams worldwide, yet the response remained blaming individual women rather than examining the environment. Despite their most promising roster ever, with four Foot Locker champions, Stanford's women struggled, while Lauren, the rare woman matching male standards, became the measuring stick validating a system that failed most women. Looking back, she recognizes the attribution error. These weren't personal failings, but systemic issues they had no language to describe. The male timeline of steady improvement doesn't apply to most women, yet we keep judging female athletes by this standard. Professional running operates on a broken model. Unlike team sports with leagues and salaries, track athletes are independent contractors piecing together endorsements. Agents estimated Lauren would earn $25,000 to $45,000, noting her look they like might boost value. When she pitched becoming America's greatest distance runner while combating disordered eating, all-white male executives dismissed her ideas as cute. One joked the best seats for women's track were at the starting line of the 1500, where the best bodies in the sport are all lined up in little more than bathing suits. She secured a $60,000 Nike deal but discovered harsh realities. Most athletes never recovered from pay cuts after bad seasons, and women faced particular disadvantages since their physical prime came later than men's. When her contract renewal approached and she mentioned wanting a baby, Nike's response was stark. They'd suspend her pay during pregnancy like a severe injury. The new offer? Just $25,000 annually for 4 years, less than half her previous salary despite Olympic-level achievements. Meanwhile, male athletes who'd failed drug tests received continued support. At Oizel's Seattle office, Lauren discovered a radically different culture. When she mentioned wanting a baby, founder Sally responded, "That's wonderful. We'll throw you a baby shower." On December 31, 2012, Lauren made history, signing with Oizel while 3 months pregnant, likely the first female professional athlete to secure a major endorsement deal while openly expecting. 3 months postpartum, she walked the runway at New York Fashion Week. When photos generated anxiety among women struggling with body image, she countered the harmful bounce back narrative by publishing unedited photos showing her postpartum body rolled belly, dimpled thighs, launching the hashtag Keeping It Real campaign. Over a million participants shared their own unfiltered images. With Oizel's support, Lauren formed Little Wing Athletics, coaching women with a holistic approach centered on athlete health. By 2021, all six Little Wing track athletes ran lifetime bests and qualified for Olympic trials. More importantly, none broke their bodies, jeopardized their health, or fell out of love with running. True equality requires rebuilding systems for women to thrive. We need specific policies protecting female athletes' health, formal certification covering female physiology, puberty, menstruation, and relative energy deficiency in sport. Boundaries preventing premature emphasis on race weight, eating disorder literacy, and immediate intervention protocols. Schools need accountability through tracking menstrual health, injury statistics, athlete satisfaction, and attrition rates. We need coach job descriptions compatible with parenting, free sports bras for middle schoolers, and elimination of uniform rules that lower body satisfaction. Lauren's journey from promising young athlete to national champion to coach reveals how sports can either break women down or build them up. Her story represents every woman told her body is simultaneously her greatest asset and biggest problem. The starting line shouldn't require choosing between athletic excellence and bodily integrity. When we honor female physiology rather than fighting it, we create spaces where women discover their power without sacrificing health, joy, or self. That's not just good for girls, it's good for everyone.